Good morning and welcome to another edition of Talk to the Experts. Dr. Cindy Nagel of Horizon Dental Clinic back in the studio. How are you?
Very good, thanks, Paul. How are you?
How come it is every time I talk to you on this show, we wind up another month? You realize 5 months have gone by in this year?
No, that's frightening.
Then we get to start a new month. Next time we talk, half a year's gone by.
Time flies when you're having fun.
There you go. So, keeping you busy?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Still doing some of those school visits and things
yes.
like that?
Yes. The next on my list is Savannah Elementary.
Savannah?
Yes.
You ever been up there before?
No.
Oh, Savannah is a nice part of the country.
It is. I've driven through it a couple of times, and, you know, we've been out on the lake last summer and, you know, got a glimpse of it from that direction, but I've never actually been in Savannah proper, so it should be fun.
Now, we touched on this the last time you were in during the Talk to the Experts. We started out actually talking about those school visits. I'd like to revisit that just for a moment.
Yeah.
The teachers, I guess, get all the kids all together and then
yep.
you make a presentation. What's in that presentation?
Try to keep it simple. We're talking, you know, kids ages 5 and 6. So, you know, usually...
Is that a crucial age for a child when it comes to teeth?
It tends to be an age where if they're going to be in the dental clinic, it might be more frequently. You know, they're starting to lose some of their front teeth. They're getting, you know, they're getting some of their back molars. If they haven't already been to the dentist, this is usually the point where parents will bring them. And it's one of those times where the cavity risk gets up there. So it's good to have that intervention, especially if they aren't sure about the dentist, if they've heard things or haven't been before. It's especially when they actually come to visit me. Like, we'll do classroom visits where the classes can come to us. And we close the clinic down for a couple of hours, and we rotate them through. They get to ride
That's
in the chair.
Neat.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work for the teachers sometimes, though, especially, say, for Savannah. I mean, for them to bus all the way into Brock, it would be quite an endeavor.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's easier if I go to them. And basically what I do is, I mean, it's kindergarten, so they always have that little rug where they all sit on it. And so far every classroom has been pretty similar. And there's a little chair, and I sit in it. And I usually start it off by just asking them what they know about the dentist. You know, how many of you have been, how many of you lost a tooth. You know, ask them some basic questions, kind of get them interested. And I always play a little game with them, too. Last summer for Overlander Days on the North Shore, we made this this board with little pieces of Velcro, and there's a bunch of these little pictures of fruits and vegetables, junk foods, all kinds of different stuff. And and so I give one to each of the kids, and I ask them, so is this good for your teeth or not very good for your teeth? And they pretty much get it right away. These are some smart kids. And I'm going to, you know, give them a little prize, a little thank you for participating, and then I read them a story. I got lots of books in the clinic, so I usually just pick a new one every time, keep it interesting for me.
Right.
And they love story time, so it's great. And then it just creates more discussion, and it gives them a chance to meet with me or someone like myself in a non-threatening way.
That's kind of neat. 5 or 6 years old, is that the intimidation age for a young student to go to a dentist or any doctor for that matter?
It's probably up there. It really depends on the child, though. I mean, at around 5 or 6, you know, they're really getting really well socialized at that point. You know, they're in kindergarten. They've been in school for a while. They know that it's okay to be going to these places, and usually they'll have been to the dentist or to a medical professional by then. There's very few children that wouldn't have. So, but this is the point in time where they really start to become more, I want to say, self-aware.
Yeah.
So they have a lot more questions. And it's nice to be able to sit there and answer those questions.
Are the parents there as well during these presentations?
There's been a couple of parents there, I think, for like classroom helper stuff.
Yeah.
But usually it's just a teacher, me, and a group of kids.
I'm sure the parents should have a big role to play in this, in talking to their children about their dental.
I hope so. Absolutely.
Now, you've got to educate the parent. It's like taking a dog to an obedience school.
Yes.
Guess who gets taught? Not the dog, the parent.
The parent, yeah. And that's the thing. I mean, when you come to the clinic, and, you know, if you have a young child or a child with a lot of cavities, we do try and take that extra time to have these conversations with the parent. A lot of parents are very frustrated because kids won't let them help them brush. And it's just a fight all the time. You know, you've got your 2-year-old or your 4-year-old, and they won't let you get a toothbrush in there. You know, we can help you, you know, learn some positioning techniques, a couple of different strategies. One parent I was talking to last week, you know, she can't get the toothbrush in her toddler's mouth because he wants to chew on it. And I said, well, number one, he'll outgrow that. It's very normal for kids to do that. They just like to chew on whatever you put in their mouth, fingers and all.
I still do it.
Yeah, but you can hold yourself back. When you're two, you really just don't know. But we were talking a little bit, and I said, well, why don't you get, like, say, an adult-sized toothbrush and stick it in there, let him chew on that, and then get in there, or dad gets in there with the other toothbrush, and you can maneuver around. And it, you know, props his mouth open a little bit, and it should make it a little easier. So there's lots of different things, different suggestions that we've got or techniques you can try. You know, we know it's not easy, and they 99% of the time they grow out of that phase, but it's rough for parents.
Yeah, life is rough sometimes, isn't it?
It can be a little unforgiving sometimes. And sometimes, no matter what you do, you're still just got no luck.
You know, often you've said on this show, Cindy, that you do encourage parents to bring the kids down, have a look at the clinic,
yeah.
Meet your you know, the people who work with you there. And
yeah.
That takes a lot of the intimidation right out of it, doesn't it?
Well, for parents, too. They don't know what to expect sometimes as well, and they're not sure, you know, how their child is going to react. And if you book, yourself an appointment, bring your toddler, bring your child, let them sit there, let them see what it's all about, let them watch you get your teeth cleaned for a few minutes, and then they'll realize that, oh, this is perfectly fine. It actually seems to work a lot better if you've got an older sibling. Well, if an older sibling can sit through a dental cleaning, the younger sibling will want to do it, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Little tricks you got up your sleeve, right?
We learn something new from every kid.
I'll bet. Listen, the reason we've got you in here today, you wanted to talk about dental implants, and this
yeah.
should be an interesting discussion.
I think so.
Dental implants versus the tooth itself. If you can save the tooth, obviously you will save it.
Yes, it's still the preference. There's, you know, a lot of good sayings out there, but there is no real replacement for your own tooth. So, you know, if you can't, like you said, if you can hold on to it, we really should. But there's also a point in time where you have to evaluate what it's going to take. Am I going to have to do root canal on this tooth and then crown this tooth? Is there going to be surgery involved to be able to crown this tooth? How much is that going to cost? How long do I think that will last? And we try and take those factors all into account when we're doing this sort of thing, because I don't want you spending, like, heaven forbid, you know, $3,000 on a tooth, and then I can only guarantee 5 to 10 years out of it, and then, or less in some cases, depending on how bad it is.
Yeah.
Or should you bite the bullet, spend $4,000 or $5,000 on an implant, call it a day.
Wow. It's not cheap, is it?
It's getting better. It's
now,
getting
what governs the
better.
Price of this type of work on the mouth?
Materials, mostly. I think that the original cost for implants was so high, mostly because, for one thing, not very many dentists were doing them. So you'd have to go to a specialist or something like that. And, of course, if you have a specialist, the fees are generally higher. But it's also the materials. Milling the titanium for these suckers continues to be a really challenging process, and I think a fairly expensive process.
Really?
Yeah, it's hard to mill titanium.
Do you do that yourself, or does that have to go off to a factory?
Gosh, no. There are hundreds of thousands of factories out there that'll do it.
And this is custom, right? This is all custom milling.
Yes. Each implant company has their own sort of design or specifications for their implants with different types of threads, taper, so shape, you know, length and width and all of these different things. Some of them will specially coat the implants with something to try and make them more compatible with, you know, your mouth tissues, whether or not that's with some more metal stuff or other sorts of materials. Sometimes they'll acid treat them as well. Everybody's kind of got their own little recipe.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the manufacturer, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess one of the hardest things when it comes to implants, let's assume the mouth is full of very healthy teeth except one tooth's gone, maybe due to an accident or something.
Yeah.
Can't be salvaged. And they're thinking about an implant. You've got to get that one tooth matching all the rest, don't you?
Yes. That part, actually, not so bad.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One single tooth replacement is my favorite. Because it's so... Yeah, it works, you know? You've got the teeth on either side. You have teeth on top and bottom. You know where the bite is. And you know what the tooth hopefully used to look like or what the other teeth look like, and you can plan it out. It's fun. That part's fun.
You're a sick person.
I have to like what I do. If I don't love it,
absolutely,
I'm not going to do it.
Absolutely. We're going to get into the meat of this subject, dental implants, with Dr. Cindy Nagel of Horizon Dental Clinic. When we return, on Radio NL. Welcome back to Talk to the Experts. Dr. Cindy Nagel from Horizon Dental Clinic in the studio. And our intent this morning, Cindy, is to talk about the implants. We kind of just talked about it a little bit last time around. Where I'd like to start with this discussion is, let's start with the surgery. What's involved with the prepping? What's involved with the surgery? What do you do? And let's go beyond that. So, all right, now I'm coming to your office. I've made the call, made the appointment.
Yep.
And you said that you don't want to see me anymore. That's another story. We'll talk about that later. But no, now I've made the appointment to come and see you. I'm seeing you for the first time about getting an implant. Take me from there.
Step number one is always prep work. So it depends on, you know, what type of implant and what sort of work we're trying to do. But before we can do any sort of surgery or planning it, you need a 3D scan of the bone. We call it a cone beam CT or a CBCT.
This is the jawbone, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really, really low dose radiation cone beam as well, which is really fascinating. If you look at the difference between our like CBCT tech and the stuff you get in the hospital, it's drastically different. The dental tech is actually ahead of medical tech when it comes to this stuff, and I love it. So, you know, we do that. We get the 3D model of your bone because, you know, you've got your sinuses on the top, you got your nose in the front.
Right.
You've got big nerves and big blood vessels running through your lower jaw and lots of different areas that could get complicated by this. Plus, you know, the jaw is really deceiving. It might look like you have a lot of bone there, but it could be 90% gum tissue and soft tissue. You might only have, like, we see some people, especially really elderly people that have lost their teeth a long time ago, their jawbone might only be like a half an inch thick.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're osteoporotic at that. So this is not good bone either.
No.
But you can still do implants as long as you know that beforehand.
Okay, so now you've decided or you decided that this implant's going to go ahead. You now know the thickness of the bone, what you're working with. Go from there.
Yep. The whole surgery is computer-guided or planned on a computer. So we've got that 3D scan. We have, like, a digital library of the different types of implants that, you know, the particular surgeon will use. Whether it's Nobel, Strum, and Hyosin, all of these different companies, you have this digital library, and you basically decide, okay, well, I want my tooth to be this big. I have, you know, 22 millimeters of bone in this direction, and I have 32 millimeters in this direction, so I'm going to place my implant here. You do the surgery, you mock it up beforehand.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so you do that way before you even, you know, touch a patient with that, which is really cool because you know exactly where you're going to go and exactly what you're going to do. A lot of the tech is even kind of progressing to the point where dentists like myself are using computer-guided stents, computer-guided guides. So it's 3D printed from that mock-up surgery, and this stent that we call it fits in your mouth, and it has a tiny little hole in it, and it shows you where you're going to do your surgery, exactly.
Holy
where.
Cow.
So there's no guesswork with stuff like that, which is also very cool.
Is there such a thing as a jaw that can't be implanted because it's too either fragile or too thin?
Yes. Yes. In that case, you need augmentation. You need grafting. Some people have to have a lot of grafting. There's even some people who have to go to the hospital.
Where do you graft from?
Depends on how much bone you need. If you only need a little bit, you can either use synthetic or cadaver bone. You can get it sourced from a supplier somewhere. Or even in some cases, you can take some extra bone from inside the mouth and grind it up.
Okay.
Like a mortar and pestle kind of thing, which is pretty fun. But if you need a big chunk of bone, you're going to have to take it usually from the hip.
Wow.
So you got to go to the hospital, you got to get put out, you got to harvest it from the hip. That's a little harsh for some people.
No kidding.
There's also a really neat surgery that can be done with the sinuses. For example, people who've lost all their top teeth and are wearing a denture, the jawbone shrinks down and the sinus actually gets bigger. We call that pneumatization. And what you can do is called a sinus lift, where you make basically a hole through that tiny piece of jawbone, and you lift the membrane, the lining of the sinus. So you don't break through it straight into the sinus. You actually lift that soft tissue lining away from the bone, and then you pack bone underneath it.
Holy cow.
Super cool. Sometimes that has to be left to heal, and sometimes you can place an implant and let things heal around it. Depends on the scenario, of course, but so many different neat things that can be done. There's really not very many people that can't have grafting or can't have implants. It just depends on how big of a surgery you're willing to go through.
So where there's a will, there's a way.
Yes. There's even some new stuff coming out. I think the Nobel released their all-in-four concept in 1998, so they've got, you know, almost... Is that coming up on 20 years of research on this stuff already? I mean, actually, like, say your average dental implant is maybe 10 millimeters, 18 at the longest. They actually have these ones called zygomatic dental implants that can be up to 52 millimeters long.
Wow.
And these suckers will go from your jaw to that bone that's underneath your eye.
Holy cow.
Yeah,
what would be the purpose of that? That would be the reinforcement then? Or?
Exactly. If you don't have enough bone in your upper jaw to hold one of those smaller implants, and you don't necessarily want to go through the sinus lift, you can breach the whole sinus, stick this sucker right up underneath your eye bone, the zygoma, your cheekbone, and it'll anchor, and these seem to be working.
What is it? Now, the implant, I gather, is a two-piece unit. You've got the implant that goes in and then the tooth that goes into the implant. Is that right?
The implant, like the word implant, refers to just the screw, the artificial root that's placed in the bone. The tooth that's on top is technically called the abutment.
Okay.
So there was always such a funny thing in school. I once had a patient come in who had an implant and a tooth, you know, an abutment placed on top. And I was probably in my third year of school, and I wasn't quite up to snuff on the terms. And I remember she'd broken the abutment, she'd broken the crown. And I went to my professor and I said, I have this patient and she's broken her implant. And he went white in the face because he thought that I meant the actual screw, the actual implant.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, that's not really possible. And I was like, well, come and look at it. And he laughed afterward. He was so nervous.
A different terminology thing.
Yeah. So I'm very careful about that particular thing these days.
But so the part that sits on the bone is the actual implant.
Yes. Whatever's inside your bone is the implant itself.
Now, I'm trying to visualize this in my mind, as I'm sure the listeners are. It's like just a chunk of metal that sits on the bone with a screw in it that's got to go into the jawbone. Is that right?
The piece of metal itself looks very much like a screw. It has threading.
Mm-hmm.
It goes all around it. And like I said, it might be, you know, a parallel type, or might have a bit of a taper where it starts out fat on the top and gets a little skinnier towards the bottom. And then it's variable lengths and widths. There's like a little teeny tiny hole in the top that will hold a second screw that is used to put part of the abutment onto it itself. But the actual implant itself looks very much like a screw.
Okay, so one tooth, or one, what was it, abutment?
Yes.
One abutment per implant, or can you put more than one abutment on an implant?
You can. You can do bridges just like you can on normal teeth, right, where you can have two teeth on either side or two implants on either side supporting, you know, with their own abutment supporting a fake tooth in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, you know, coming back to, say, the all-on-four concept or having multiple implants placed, if you have no teeth, you can do six implants or four implants and have all, you know, you can have 20 teeth or 24 teeth placed all in a fixed bridge or removable.
Wow.
Yeah. So it used to be like that. They used to think like one implant per tooth, and there's x-rays out there. I mean, you can Google them, and it looks insane. There's one implant, just like there's like one root for every tooth, and it just looks ridiculously crazy compared to the type of surgery we do these days.
How painful is this surgery?
It depends on what type of surgery you're getting. So if you're getting a ton of grafting or you're going through, you know, some augmentation processes, that can be a lot more intense. The healing time's a lot longer. But, I mean, if you have good bone, you're relatively good health, let's say, and you're placing a single implant, you're going to be sore for about a day.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, technology's come a long way, huh?
Yeah, well, especially when you're using the right kind of, you're setting yourself up for success, right? You got the right medications on board, you're using the right tools. I use the laser, right? So I'm very gentle with the soft tissue. I'm not cutting and slicing and hacking bits and pieces off here and
That's
there.
That's not cool.
No, nobody likes that. Nobody wants to see all the blood. Like it's such a beautiful surgery, and it's fairly bloodless. Like there's really just very little to it. It's mostly the planning stuff, right? Like if you plan it properly, the actual implant placement can take about 10 minutes.
Wow. I've got Dr. Cindy Nagel in the studio this morning on Talk to the Experts. She's with Horizon Dental Clinic. We're talking about dental implants, and we'll take a break, Cindy. Come back, and we'll get past the beyond the point where the patient's in your chair and you've got these implants beside, ready to go. We'll see what happens next, okay?
Yeah.
That's next on Radio NL. Welcome back to Talk to the Experts. I'm Paul Graham, Dr. Cindy Nagel in the studio from Horizon Dental Clinic. We're talking about dental implants, and this is turning out, Cindy, to be a very interesting conversation.
Yeah.
We left off during the last segment where we've got the patient in your chair, you're looking at the situation, and now you're getting ready to put the implant, which is the part that goes right onto the bone.
Yep.
Get that in, and you do this this surgery with laser and all kinds of neat little toys you got beside you. And, of course, the implant will be installed later. Before we get going on that, I just had a thought during the break. I can imagine that once you've put the implant in, you've got to wait like 6 months before you can do the other part, and maybe wait a little while longer before you can actually eat an apple. What's the deal on that?
It depends on the implant, of course, but what's really fascinating with a lot of patients that I see and a lot of patients that, you know, my other colleagues see is that there's still this this belief amongst the general public that, let's say you're replacing a single tooth, so you have that tooth pulled, you have to wait 6 months until it's healed, and then you can have the implant surgery. And then after the implant surgery, you have to wait 6 months before you can put your abutment, your tooth, on top of it. So for a lot of these patients, they're being told that they're going to be waiting a year and spending, you know, $5,000 on this before they have a functioning tooth. And what's really fascinating is a lot of the new studies that are coming out are suggesting that a lot of that is completely unnecessary at this point. It's really neat. If you're, and again, it depends on the patient. If you're going to heal well, if you're a good healer, and let's say you're missing your front tooth and you want something in there right away, you want an immediate solution, you can do that. You know, the tooth can be removed. The implant can be placed as long as there's enough bone, you know, around the tooth socket that the implant can be anchored. There's always grafting that goes around it because the implant is never the same shape as the tooth.
Right.
It's never the same. So there's going to be this gap there, and we want to fill that in with bone because we want this, what we call osseointegration. We want the bone to fuse to that implant so that it doesn't come out. And then you can have a temporary abutment, a temporary crown placed on that implant right away. Same surgery, same time. And then you've got your smile. You've got your smile back.
So I guess between new technology, new techniques, and new materials, all this can be possible.
Absolutely, yep. And, you know, you live with that temporary tooth for about 4 months on average. And even that, a lot of the time, is a little bit overkill. A lot of people could have it in less than 2 months, but we, you know, a lot of us like to
so
wait.
So what are you waiting for? You're waiting for the...
That osseointegration, that complete fusion of the implant titanium to your bone.
Okay, and what do? Take x-rays to determine that this is all ready to go?
X-rays help, absolutely. But mostly there's this this meter thing called an ISQ, a stability quotient, which you place this funny little rod on the implant, and it looks ridiculous, and it doesn't hurt or anything, it looks silly. And it gives us a measurement of how much, you know, how much of that implant is stuck to bone. And as long as you have a quotient of, I believe it's greater than 65 or 70, then you're good to go.
Yeah. Is there such a thing as an implant coming loose at any point?
Yes. Most of the failures happen within the first 2 weeks.
Oh, okay. Now, what would cause the failures?
Going to Mexico.
don't drink the water, yeah.
Yeah, no, don't drink it. Well, I mean, if you're having the implant placed in Mexico, a lot of them do fail because they're poor materials. We talked
right.
a little bit about this before. Poor materials and poor follow-up. But it depends on, again, a lot of the time it's the patient. If you have, say, poor bone and not enough grafting was done, you know, if we were trying to be conservative and we made the wrong call, or if you're a smoker, that's going to increase your risk of it to fail. If you have active gum disease, and let's say you still have all of your teeth in there, but you're not getting your teeth cleaned, or you have that bacteria, and you've got a single implant, the implant is going to be susceptible to that the same as your teeth are.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, an implant can never get a cavity. It's never going to need a root canal. It doesn't abscess like that, but it can suffer from gum disease. So if you're not willing to put in the time to take care of the gum disease, then please don't get implants because it's a waste of money.
There's maintenance involved then.
They have to be cleaned.
That's
it. Cleaned. Even if you have zero teeth in your mouth and you have 8 to 10 implants in your mouth, you need to have them cleaned at least once a year for most people.
From a professional, not
yes.
the toothpaste.
I mean, daily, yes. You have to do your homework, too, just
yeah.
like anything. But, yeah, on a professional basis, you should be coming in once a year, have them checked, make sure everything's still healthy. It's maintenance, right? And if we do see that the tissues are starting to deteriorate or there's something that's going on there, a lot of the time we can graft or we can do something to stop that process or to heal that process instead of you know, waiting an extra 2 years and losing your $5,000 investment.
What about the abutments? Do they come loose at all?
They can come loose. It's not doesn't happen very often, but they can come loose, and it's an easy fix. Usually we just tighten them back on, and you're good to go. Sometimes they'll break. Just like if you have a regular crown in your mouth, if bad things happen sometimes, and these things are made out of porcelain, zirconia, metal, things like that,
yeah.
sometimes they can break apart. You can usually get a new one, and like I said, you can't really hurt the implant itself. But the abutment, yeah, sometimes that'll need to be replaced. It's not very often, though.
I guess, folks, it's a bit of a misnomer once you've done all your fancy work and they look in the mirror and say, this is great, this is beautiful, it's artificial, I don't have to do any more. That mindset must be pretty easy to fall into.
Yeah, I imagine that it would be. Even people with dentures don't think to come into the dentist once a year, and we should still be doing oral cancer screenings and soft tissue screenings. And
let's talk about that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, an annual edentulous exam. If you have no teeth, you should be getting your mouth checked. Your doctor isn't going to do it. How many doctors do you see that are going to go back there and check all the little nooks and crannies in your mouth and make sure that everything's good? Very few of them know what they're looking at.
You told me some time ago those who wear dentures don't get gum disease because, you know, it sits right on the skin, right?
Yes, it's true. There's no teeth, therefore there's no gum disease. But there can be damage to the tissues in the mouth. For example, if your denture doesn't fit and you're wearing it a lot and it's really loose, it can cause the tissue to get really fibrotic or really loose, or the bone can start to fail around things. You can get ulcers. Most of the time, my biggest concern is the oral cancer because it's on the rise.
We spent a whole show on that.
Yeah, we did. I mean, it's still, I think, the 8th or 7th leading cancer that kills people. The survival rate is less than 5 years because we catch it so darn late.
Yeah.
And it's increasing because of HPV infections and, of course, you know, in the populations of people that still use tobacco and alcohol heavily.
Yeah, that's an ongoing battle, isn't it?
Always.
But that's interesting about the dentures. I didn't know that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, your teeth are gone. You've got this hunk of plastic in your mouth, and goodbye. Have them to see you whenever.
It's a cheap exam. I think it's like $30 once a year. And
well, what's a sign that the denture is not serving you properly? Coming loose would be one thing,
yep.
And that's because the gums are shrinking, right?
Yep.
And if you continually are putting liners and stuff in there,
yep.
You better think about this.
Yeah, if you're using a ton of Polident, there are better ways.
Yeah.
other things to look for, of course, ulcers, patches of tissue that look weird. Like if you've got an area, like a red patch or a white patch, you need to have it checked. You really
now,
do.
Well, a denturist insists that the patient come and see someone like yourself first before the denturist does any measurements or anything like that.
With complete dentures, so zero teeth, no. I don't believe it's a requirement for them to be screened by a dentist before that's done. Even for certain types of partial dentures where you still have teeth in there, but you also have dentures replacing some missing spaces, a lot of denturists, they're pretty autonomous and they know their craft. But if they do have concerns about the teeth or they have a patient that isn't being regularly seen, they will, you know, at the very least highly recommend it. And I am really pleased to see that a lot of the denturists in town, you know, if they have patients who have implants and they realize that they're not getting that maintenance, they're sending them to us. For example, you know, Gary Salloway, Kamloops Implant and Denture Center, whenever he has a patient that has, you know, a couple of implants in there, he sends them or he suggests that they come to me anyway.
Yeah.
Because then he educates them about how the implants need to be cleaned and how things need to be checked and maintained.
What a fascinating conversation this morning. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, it's been fun.
I'm sure a lot of the listeners may have a question or two for you and have an answer that we didn't pass along. How would they get a hold of you?
We are located at 1760 Mayfair Street.
Right across from Brock, right?
Exactly, center. Yeah, on Tronquil, across the street from the Brock Shopping Center. Our website is horizondental.clinic, and our phone number is 778 765-3928.
Well, thanks for doing this again.
Thanks, Paul.
Next time I see you, you know what's going to happen, eh? Another month off the calendar.
Yeah, I can just check it off.
Oh, man. It's a lot of fun talking with you always, Cindy, and I appreciate
your
time again.
Yeah, I love being here. Thanks, Paul.
Dr. Cindy Nagel from Horizon Dental Clinic. You can hear this show in its entirety. Again, if you have any questions at all on this topic, all you have to do is give her a shout, and she's more than happy to answer any of your questions. The entire show is on the website. All you have to do is go to RadioNL.com, top of the homepage, click on Audio Vault, and just go from there. That's it for this edition of Talk to the Experts. Have yourself a great day.